Lori Bolster has a lot of credentials. She's a PhD, she's a reverend, she's a science of mind practitioner. She's done so much stuff, and she's trained as a science of mind practitioner, and she's done so much over the years that I just delight in her consciousness. I delight in her personality. I went to see her in Colorado last year, and we had such a good time. There's my kitty. She wants to be in on this. So it's always a pleasure for me to see Lori. I used to play with her every Monday after Ministry of Prayer at the Celebration Center. For years and years, we met and had coffee on Monday afternoon, and I'm getting bonked like crazy here. Just enjoyed each other's company. And so it's a joy for me just to look into Lori's face today. And so I am thrilled that our guest speaker today is Lori Bolster, and I'm going to mute myself because wild things in a mood, and she's making noise. Thanks, Lori.
Thank you. Thank you, Connie. Yes, we did that. We spent, a couple of hours or more together every Monday afternoon for literally years. And I remember thinking at the time, I didn't know how this would ever end. I could not imagine it ending. And then time and circumstance, and it did. A very strange experience. Anyway, I mean, the ending of it. We sing, we get in the sanctuary and turn the sound system on, and we'd sing, and we'd have a great old time. But anyway, yes, today we are working on a chapter from the How to Change Your Life book, which is, you know, they talk about an instruction manual for how to live. Well, ta-da, there you go. It's an instruction manual. Spends three-fourths of the time, though, I think it's about three-fourths of this book, is centered on getting yourself ready. I mean, just learning the basics. What's this all about? Doing the prep work. And then it gets down to how to approach different things. Today's chapter is Better Living Now. And that means right now. And this book is How to Change Your Life. Now, that makes an assumption that you're willing to change. And I'm making an assumption that the change you're willing to make is in a positive, life-enhancing, uplifting, energetic flow of how you want to be, because you already are you. And that is something that's a really interesting notion, because who are you? And how do you want to be? Which matters, because we all know, okay, well, here I am. And we have this notion that, well, here I am, I'm me in this body. And you are you, and you, and you, and you, and you, and you, and you. But actually, what we know and teach, and to whatever degree is possible for us and as individuals, believe that it is all one entity. It is all one, well, I say entity, it's just all one thing, all one creative force. It's all one whatever all this is. And it just shows up as, you know, the trees and the dog and the computer and me and you, and that's how it shows up. And it's really an interesting thing, because we get to pick how we want to be, but then it turns out that we are mightily influenced by other things. I mean, you get that thing about, you know, watch the old movies of what happened in Germany in the 1930s, and it's just mind-blowing what happened to hundreds of thousands of people who all joined into a behavior that was totally like, what? How, what? Are you, And we can do it in this country too. I mean, we did it in the Jim Crow South. We did it, and people just convinced themselves that this is an okay way to be. Hey. We know everybody's got their place. You guys are at the bottom and we're at the top, and that's how it is. And it's like, wait a minute. And these were good Christian people. They even stood on the Bible to say that was possible. So knowing who we are, who I am, and you deciding who are you, that's got a little more to it than what we sometimes think. And so this chapter is about better living now. How do you and I want to be? What is it we want to turn into? And it's an interesting thing because there's the mechanics, the law that we are working within, that there is a creative force that we can tap into. We can use it because it's just there. It's impartial, doesn't care one way or the other, which is proved by the fact that our current president used to attend or was affiliated with a New Thought Center in New York City, got married in one, and you, when you listen to him, you can hear it. You can hear it, all the positive stuff and coming out of him. Okay, that's one way. But then we can choose. There's more to it than just use of the law. It's also about, well, how are we going to use the law? Knowing that this is available to us, and it's available to everybody. It's impartial. It's however you're going to go with it. You want to use it to set something up that basically takes money from a lot of people to enrich one's own self because that improves my life. Hey, I got more income. Yeah, that's a good life. Or do you want to use this law in a way that is life enhancing, not just for you, but recognizes the humanity of all these other people and participates in the enhancement of life for more than just me or my immediate family or the people I really care about. It's about, there we go. Now, how are we going to use this law? But back to basics, the law itself. And that's where this book's at. And so, or at least at this point in this book. So we get, and some of this we also know plays into psychology. And Carolyn, can I have control, please? I want to show something. We've all heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Have I got it?
Just hold on a second.
Yeah, sorry, I should have said that earlier. I was going to and then got distracted.
I coast.
But anyway, so we can all be part of this force. Thank you. And knowing that all of life is happening within this force, we're all familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Can you can all see this, I assume? Yes? Okay, good. So on this, and I've got two screens going here. So at the bottom is just very basic survival needs, whatever it takes. We're going to, you know, get enough food. We're going to keep ourselves safe. We've got to survive. We've got to be alive. And remember, this is a powerful biological thing. That it's a need to survive is massive. We will do things in the interest of personal survival that are important and to take care of our offspring to make sure that we all survive. And then gradually we keep ourselves safe and we get along with other people. We learn how to be in community. We learn how to grow. We learn about belonging, and belongingness matters. And that's something we're really, I need to talk slower probably. Belongingness matters. And we're learning that more and more now during this time when we're all so physically separate. And yet we do belong. We belong in communities. We belong to and with each other. We belong to certain ideas. And so you belong. And then we gradually grow, we take care of our needs for being with people, and then continue to grow and get connected. And this was being developed back in the 1950s is when Maslow was publishing. He died in in 60s. He died in 1970 at the age of 62. So who knows where he would have gone with this. Somebody put this transcendence on the top of this hierarchy. Maslow actually added it on a parallel slope where it's all about me, but then also I'm connected to others. And so that's a way different way of looking at things from once upon a time when it really was just about, you know, life as we can see around us. And that's all that mattered. And then people started talking about other ways of being. They talked about, they come to me. There it is. Okay. Going to do this again. Probably should have just stayed there. Whoops.
I'm going to interrupt just for a minute and tell Felicia that I'm hearing your voices. And it looks like it's on the phone.
Sorry, guys.
I'm muted. Thanks.
Fun as well. Just a moment.
Okay. Now, are you seeing a colorful spiral?
Yes.
All right. So people took it a step farther. A fellow named Claire Graves started working on this and saying, here are the primitive needs. And gradually we learn to be people and work in community. And gradually we worked. This is what happens in community and connection with the rest of the world. Gradually we work like this. And then we learn how to get along with others. We learn to negotiate. Down here, it might be like, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm going to have to kill you. Same thing with religion. Here's my religion. You guys are wrong. You're doing the wrong God. We're going to have to kill you. But we grow. We grow through that. Oh, here, we can have a shared experience. We're all in this together. Gradually, you move into, oh, we're all in this together. And some things further us more than others. And then there goes. And this is the system they used in South Africa when they were trying to sort out how are they going to govern now that the white folks are letting go and getting out of the way. How are they going to govern when you've got dozens and maybe hundreds of different groups and tribes all thinking that they need to be in charge and they've got a better way? So they needed a way to talk to them about levels of development. How are the different groups functioning? Is a group functioning here? Do you want them running the government? Or how do they all fit? And as we go through these levels, we learn the skills available from each of them, because sometimes you have to be able to just stand up for yourself. Other times you want to collaborate. Other times you want to really step forth with, I've got an idea we haven't talked about before. And so you work amongst these. And as people learn and grow, they have access to all of the skills that come with each level of development and how people can function. And so I'm going to come back to the group. So it's about how I can use the law, which is as clear as the law of gravity. If I drop something on this planet, it's going to hit the floor. It's just the way it is.
Oh, that's great.
There's lots of things like that. And there's this law of what am I doing with my mind, with my intentions, for how I am. But it's not just about me inside my skin, how I am. It's how I am in connection with my environment, with other people, with everything, because I'm part of this whole. And so the spiritual teachers teach about centering. And they talk about where you are praying from. When you're doing a treatment, where are you doing it from? Cynthia Bourgeau in her books about centering prayer makes that point. It's not about who you're praying to or even what you're praying about. It's first of all, basic essence, what are you affirming from? Who are you? And you don't even have to know clearly who you are or why you're here, what your purpose on this planet is. You just have to know that if I just sit and I just sit and open myself up to my life as part of this whole, that is a step in the direction of better living now. Because when I do that, I'm willing to be open to whatever that creative force flows through me. I can participate in that. I can get connected with that. The Buddhist monks say the same thing. In the Zen Buddhism is just about the very first step is you just sit there. You sit properly. They have, you know, some suggestions about how to sit, that you sit upright, you sit tall, stretch your head to the sky, tip your chin a little bit, because if you go this way, the energy doesn't work the same. So tip a little and sit. And don't be thinking about things. But if something floats through, just let it go. That's part of life. It's part of the way we are. And it's okay. But then they'll just say, simply doing that is all there is to it. Now you're doing Zen meditation. And they have suggestions about breathing and a lot of other things, trying to control. And, you know, just be there. Just be there with the spaciousness that is everything. It's like, where are you attending from? If you open yourself up to this essence of who you are and what is coming through you, through me as who I am with my experiences in life and intentions. And so if you open yourself now, you decide also, what kind of a person am I? What do I care about? Because different people grow in different ways. They have different skills. But to develop spiritually, to develop as a mature spiritual practitioner, calls for certain things, like paying attention to it. And so we say, well, I set an intention. I have a desire, and I affirm this about me, and this is the way it is. And yes, on some level, that can work. The law works regardless of, you know, who or what you're all about. If you really are bringing a belief and a passion to something, an intention and a desire, the law can work. And it's not going to say, hey, you have to only do good things. The law works for people. It doesn't matter what they're doing with it. It works. We've seen it happen. Happens throughout history. Humans seem to have a pack instinct, and it's just, you know, we sometimes we'll go along with something just because somebody's so fun and exciting and charismatic. And so it's very important for us to be clear. Social media is just wreaking havoc with people because of that kind of thing. It's like, what? Wait a minute, maybe I need to check this out. And so there's a responsibility as spiritual practitioners and people who are growing spiritually to really be attending to who we are. And to be spending a little more time with some of this than just thinking, well, I can set an intention and really want it. And there it's going to be. Well, yeah. I think there's more to it. And so the people who spend their whole lives in meditation, their whole lives in spiritual awareness and connection, they come back to it again and again and again. How do we want to live? This is about better living, not just at the moment. I have a clear, you know, desire, and I'm really going to want it. And I want it a lot, and I believe I can have it a lot, and I've talked myself into knowing I can have it. Well, if it's actually going to be part of who you are, then there are some other things involved. I remember reading or hearing Carolyn Mace once upon a time say, she just thought it was kind of funny that, or sad, I don't know, that people honestly think that they can have an impact on their life and change things and, you know, have influence by thinking about something and meditating and believing when we can't control our minds for 10 seconds. How are you really going to affect your life and your experience when you can't control your own mind for 10 seconds? We can't hardly hold a belief 10 seconds, clearly. And yet we think that we're going to make, you know, it's going to have an influence on how we are and who we are. And so we come back to, okay, we set an intention. I want to have this happen in my life. I want a better life. Maybe I don't have something that I just need. And it can be, you know, something like a car. If a car is going to make a big difference in your life because that's how you get to work, that's how you get your kids where they need to be, that's how you go shopping, you know, the store is too far to walk. Yeah, a car makes a big difference. So it can be a car. It can be things like that. It doesn't have to be high and mighty and noble or spiritual. It can be anything, quite literally. And so you come back to the intention. But it also matters how we practice. It's a spiritual practice. And so how are we doing this? Are we remembering this longer than 10 seconds a day or 30 seconds a day? Longer than 2 minutes a day? Are we, or throughout the day? How are we going about our spiritual practice in order to have a better living, having a better life now? How much, what are we willing to give to it and engage in it? And so, a fellow recently wrote a book, a guy named James Clear wrote a book called Atomic Habits. And his point is that we can make enormous differences and changes in teeny little increments. That if you got a thing about, my life is just not there. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. I'm working like crazy and getting nowhere. Okay, now change your thinking, change your life. What have you got? Where are you going? And you set it. And if you find, I can't see how I'm going to have that. I'm saying it, but you know, there's a piece of me that's saying, okay, dial it back a bit. Yes, you can make that intention. There it is. And there are people, you know, Jesus, stand up and walk. And the guy did, according to the stories. But we can also do it in a way that really resonates as, yes, I believe this. I believe I can do this, or I can participate. I can see this. I can feel it in a way that I'm participating in a creative flow, that I'm not just wishful thinking or magical thinking, that I'm actually part of a creative process. I can see it. I can think it. I can feel it. Yeah, there we go. I can get to here, and then I can go farther in what I'm intending and feeling and believing about myself and my life. I can grow into it. There was a fella who, named Terry McBride, wrote a book probably 30 years ago now. He had a terrible medical situation going. I don't know what it was particularly. I don't remember. It's some kind of degenerative thing where his spine and organs or tissues, I don't know what, were just kind of going. And they were doing multiple surgeries on him, trying to keep him intact, trying to get him back to functioning. He ended up with a colostomy, and it's just deteriorating. And finally, he hit a point where he just hit that wall and decided, I have to do something about this. And we know we've got a mind-body connection. We know that. And he turned his attention to mind doing something about his medical condition. And so it worked. But he said in the talk that he gave, I think it was at Celebration Center, that he would set this goal. I'm healthy and I know I can poop the way I'm supposed to, the way the original design was and on this like this. And then he realized he couldn't see getting there. He didn't know how that was going to happen. And he sort of didn't believe it. And he just flat out said, if you don't believe it, come to something, establish something that you actually do believe, that you can get behind that, you can resonate with that. And so he had to back up. I can see that I can stand up and walk across the room and come back and sit down and I'm good. I can see, I know this is true. And gradually, a bit at a time, that's where he got to. And finally, he did what the doctors were saying was never going to happen. And they straightened out his plumbing and it worked. And they had been saying, we can't do it, it'll never happen. And it happened. And so he has spent a lot of time working with other people explaining what happened and how to get your mind there, how to do that. He's doing coaching of that sort of thing still. And so we can do this. We can do these things. What do you really believe? Who are you? Hi, Ed. And Diane, I just saw you there. And so it's, what do you really believe? Who are you really? If we sit quietly and we allow ourselves to be open to all the possibilities and all of that creative energy and imagination that flows through us, then we discover, okay, here it is. We listen first. here's mine to do, and here's mine not to do. Here's mine to do. And then, to what extent? How am I going to do this? Do I really believe? Sometimes we don't know how it's going to happen. But if we can believe that it can happen, yeah, this is it. And we see it. We see it as truth. We see it as our reality. And then, of course, if there's things you realize, oh, this is mine to do, then we take those steps. We talk about treat and move your feet. There it is. Here's my, in this quiet spaciousness where I am totally the most tied in and open to the flow of creativity that there is inside my body self. Now, what is mine to do about, oh, this is the idea I want to work with. Mine, and here it is, and here's my intention. Here's where I want to go with this. Here's what is mine to do about this. And then it's so important, it comes in alongside that part about who am I? No, and there's a moral development. And that's important because, and it's all and not always obvious. We watch where people get caught up with whole movements that are at their foundation immoral and wrong. Even if it's legal, it's still wrong. It's still immoral. It's not treating humans the way humans should be treated. And so who are we? How do I participate in this world that I'm living in? Where am I going with this? On page 35 in this book is the question, do you know where your mind is? What are we doing with our fine minds? And are we checking in every once in a while, or do we just set an intention in the morning and then we go along with whatever's going on all day and we don't check in again until tomorrow morning? Maybe it's a good idea every once in a while during the day, check in. What am I doing with my fine mind? If I set my intention and my passion and my clarity at 7 in the morning and then I don't check back in, what's my fine mind doing all day? For the next hours and hours, where's it going? Does this have a chance? If I'm there, if I'm checking in like, yeah, 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 am I bringing life to this all day throughout my life? Am I going, yeah, yeah, there it is, there it is. Am I building a connection with what I think or what I say or I believe is truth? How engaged am I with that? Am I doing that with my fine mind? Or am I just wandering my fine mind all over the place, totally unfocused, just going along, going along, going along all day, and then tomorrow morning, here I am again. Well, I don't know. And knowing that we are all one. They have tests now, research, where they took MRIs with people watching somebody else get hurt, a little child get hurt or something like that. And this person's brain reacted as if it happened to them. It's called empathy. Some people don't seem to have it, but it's hardwired into us, that kind of oneness. This thing down here didn't happen to me. I cannot watch those funniest video things where they have people falling down and tripping, and it's just awful. I can't do it. All my little cilia go, ooh, ooh, ooh. It's like, I can't tell the difference between them and me. Actually, I can, but yeah, it's like, and we are all connected in that way. It's an energetic connection. It's a oneness connection. And so what are we doing with our fine minds all day, every day? There are people that sit in meditation and then they go off and do who knows what. Or do you sit in meditation? Do you get clear about who you are? Do you feed your soul? Do you allow your brain to do a little housekeeping while you stay calm and clear and not cognitively processing? And it takes care of itself and does a little housekeeping and lets go of unused nodes, polishes up and tightens up the synapses that are still working, and yay. And then you go about your life. And then you come back in and you use that. You tap back into that. Yeah, that's who I am. this is what I'm about. This is my intention. Yeah. Do you feed your intention? Do you feed that goodness? Do you feed that growth? Do you feed that expanding spiritual maturity? Do you feed that connection? Somebody asked Cynthia Bourgeau how she meditates. How much does she meditate during the day? She's an Episcopalian preacher who's basically kind of interfaith. And she said, you know, that's really hard to answer because it's sort of all the time, more or less. Yeah, it's kind of all the time, more or less. We're not always thinking, I'm spiritually connected and I'm working on this and I'm doing this. But we have fed it to the point where we're sort of living in that mind space, in that heart space. We're sort of engaged and connected and flowing in that all the time. And so from there, we can tap back into, oh, I don't even know how long I'm talking. I need to wrap this up. And so we can tap into that and bring that into the forefront of our lives where it's part of who we are all the time. And there we are. And then we can turn it to, how's my employment situation? How are my finances? How's my spiritual development? How are my interpersonal relationships? How am I doing here? Am I doing how I want to be? Okay. And we bring that clarity and that power and that belief. We go here. Go here. We go here. We go here. And so it is.
So it is.
And so it is. Thank you, Lori.